understand, defend, and share your faith with confidence. This is Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Thank you for joining us on Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles, and resources. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, then please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. But now for today's show. On the 3rd of June, Jürgen Moltmann, the German theologian, pastor, and author, died aged 98. Moltmann wrote more than 40 books and held the post of Professor of Systematic Theology at the German University of Tübingen from 1963 to 1994. In an article for Christianity Today, Daniel Silliman wrote this: Moltmann is widely regarded as one of the most important theologians since World War II. According to theologian Miroslav Volf, his work was existential and academic, pastoral and political, innovative and traditional, readable and demanding, contextual and universal. He showed how the central themes of Christian faith spoke to the fundamental human experiences of suffering. So many people have written tributes or talked about the impact of Moltmann, and author and pastor Philip Yancey said this: in a single sentence, Jürgen Moltmann expresses the great span from Good Friday to Easter. It is, in fact, a summary of human history, past and present and future. And this is the quote that he's talking about. It says, "God weeps with us so that we may someday laugh with him." And Jana Gonwar, the assistant professor of theology at Gannon University, said this about Moltmann: Moltmann was on a par with Barth and Pannenberg as one of the great Christian systematic theologians of the 20th century. But it was not primarily his systematics that had a profound effect on those whose work and whose lives he changed. Instead, one piece or another of his theology slipped into our heads and our hearts, under our skin. His writing, like his demeanour, was humble and self-effacing. It was, one could say, quietly revolutionary. The unsuspecting reader might flip a page, stumble upon an unassuming sentence, and catch themselves thinking, "This changes everything." And then she goes on to say, "I became a theologian because Moltmann showed me that theology could be an act of ministry." And then Stephen Losel, who's the professor in the practice of systematic theology at Candler School of Theology, said this: Moltmann was not only a theologian of great renown, he was also a prophetic voice speaking up time and time again to stir up Christians whenever he felt that they'd got too self-assured in their life of faith. Jürgen was at the forefront of many important debates in the Christian church, from crafting a Christian theology after Auschwitz to calling for a greening of theology in light of the impending ecological crisis, to encouraging liberation theologies all across the globe, from Latin America to Korea. Joining me to reflect on some of Moltmann's work and how it impacts us today is the Reverend Dr. Justin Terry, Vice Principal and Academic Dean at Wycliffe Hall. Justin, before we dive into some of Moltmann's theology, would you be able to give us a bit of a brief overview of his life and how he came to faith?
Yes, that is actually a very important part of his theology, as it turns out, because he grew up in Germany, in Hamburg, and his father and family was liberal Protestants. And he was himself a soldier in the Second World War and was taken prisoner and was given a Bible, I think, by an American chaplain. And that's really what he read in the Bible. And part of what he was dealing with is hearing the terrible things that had been done in the war, including by some of his own compatriots. He was just so ashamed and appalled by all that's happened, not just obviously on one side, but loads of terrible things that happened in the war. And he was wondering, how do I talk about this in relation to God? And it really was through his reading of the Bible, and particularly thinking about the resurrection of Jesus, that he began to find hope in what was for him a real time of despair.
Justin, Moltmann has written over 40 books, so I'm not suggesting that you summarise all of them, but what have been some of his key works that have really taken root in theology as we know it now?
It must be said he has turned into one of the most significant theologians of the century. So he is that sort of scale of thinker. I would say, just to focus in on one or two of them, I would say theology of hope and the Crucified God. And I think the particular interest in those two books is not just they've had a huge impact on other people's thinking, but they do very much speak into the life of everyday people, everyday Christians. The theology of hope is Bultmann really thinking about the implications of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. He became persuaded that has really happened in history, and he's very interested in the history of Jesus and his resurrection, and he did some work on that. And he realized, no, if Jesus really has risen from the dead, that really can give us hope, despite really terrible things happening and really horrible things going on again and again and again. But if it is the case that the God we worship is the God who raised Jesus from the dead after he'd been through some really terrible things, that gives us hope. And it's a hope of the future, not that we're going to find in our current existence everything kind of balances out, that good people get good things and bad people find their comeuppance in this life. No, he's realizing there has to be something beyond this life. And that is very much part of the Christian faith. And he makes that more prominent. His, what they call eschatology, thinking about the last things, was one of the things he emphasized in a way that some of his predecessors hadn't, because he thought this is crucial for hope. So theology of hope will be one. Another one, possibly the most famous piece of work, controversially I should say, is The Crucified God. Because he's also thinking, yes, but what does it mean that Jesus, the Son of God, died on the cross? What does it tell us about God? And what God thinks about suffering and death and despair? And he increasingly began to think, we need to get away from some sense that God is untouched by our suffering and our misery. However we talk about it, because clearly he doesn't want to give the impression that God is sort of going to be changed by the events of the world and get so upset he's unable to perform the functions of God, if I put it in a rather crude way. So he doesn't want to lose that sense that God is so strong and so powerful, he's not going to be pulled down by the crises here on earth. But he does want to say, yes, but he's not untouched by it. If we really mean God loves us, which is such a crucial Christian claim, it must mean that when we suffer, he feels it in some sense. And that's what he says we see in Jesus on the cross. So when we think about our own suffering, we want to think about it in relation to Jesus' own suffering. And in some sense, this is God's suffering. The Father is allowing his Son to suffer. The Son himself is suffering. The Spirit is somehow caught up in his suffering. And so there is something very much at the heart of God that recognizes suffering for the serious thing that it is. And because of the resurrection, brings hope.
Justin, how did you first come across Bultmann? And in what ways has he impacted your own personal theology or outlook on the world, would you say?
So I really came across Bultmann when I was doing theological study in preparation for ordination when I was up in Durham. And he was one of the figures who a lot of us evangelicals were looking forward to hearing about, because his name came up, but generally evangelicals smiled. Because they could see here's someone who's also serious about the Bible, high praise for Jesus, talks about the reality of the resurrection and the importance of these things for our faith and practice. So in all sorts of ways, we were looking forward to it when he came onto the scene. And in many ways, it was that theology of the crucified God that was amazing. I was engaged with this later. I discovered more about his work on the theology of hope. So really, it was that. And also then you begin to realize if we are called to account for someone going through some suffering or grief, in those two works, you've got something really significant we can say. On the one hand, when you are suffering, we don't need to imagine that God is untouched and sort of aloof. God is genuinely touched by our suffering. But not just stop there, but also say, yes, but he also raises the dead. And there's hope beyond this life. And that's absolutely critical to the Christian hope that God is the one who can raise the dead and bring us life everlasting.
And I suppose, like you, Justin, Bultmann was a pastor as well as an academic theologian. He started out his Christian life as a pastor. How was that significant in his writing? Because it wasn't just this academic practice that he was writing about, was it? It really mattered to him that we spoke to people as people.
Exactly. And I think that is so important for so many theologians. It's encouraging to me, frankly, that there are so many famous theologians that are also famous pastors, and they preach and they teach and they engage with people. Because I think that enriches our theology, and it helps us to ground what we're thinking about, reading about, maybe writing about. It actually helps us think, what does that actually mean in reality for the people I know, the people I'm going to see on Sunday? So if you're in a preaching ministry or pastoral ministry or teaching ministry, being alongside regular Christian people, if you like, rather than academics who are thinking academically, it really helps enormously to see the significance of ideas you might be reading about in the week, so to speak. You're going to be pitching about them on Sunday. And but my experience, I did my PhD part-time while I was the vicar of a church. And so for me, I was constantly seeing that what I'm learning about in my studies was remarkably relevant to the pastoral ministry that I was engaged in. And so I've seen it myself, but you can certainly see it in people like Maltman. They connect the theory and the practice, and that, I do think, is where Christian faith works so well.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
You're listening to Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. How did he ensure that what he was writing about in the ivory towers of academia whittled down, not just in a pastoral sense, but in a, I guess, a kind of grander picture of society? How did he make sure that those theological ideas didn't just remain academic?
Yes, but he also had quite an interest in politics. The Christian faith isn't simply a private matter. It's a public claim about the nature of the world, and that we're in a world created by God, sustained by God, loved by God, cared for by God. So for him, you can't somehow leave politics as a sort of separate subject completely. His understanding of the Christian faith is that it will inevitably have implications for our thinking about politics. And so he engaged with that quite directly. And some of the people who were thinking about Latin America, particularly, and the liberation theologians working there, often found things that Maltman was writing about: suffering, being alongside those who suffer, concern for the poor. These things had all sorts of resonance, initially, particularly in Latin America, but obviously much more widely than that. So he does think about how politics and our work and our life together is directly affected by our Christian faith.
Yeah, I found a quote actually from The Crucified God, which he talks about the importance of engaging with politics. It says, "The Church of the Crucified Christ must take sides in the concrete social and political conflicts going on and about it and in which it is involved, and it must be prepared to join and form parties," which that's quite strong from a theologian, isn't it?
It is. Notice quite wisely, he didn't tell us which party we had to join.
Yeah.
Obviously, he has his own views, and he'd probably recommend that's the party we do join. But it does seem that, particularly as obviously we're in a sort of election season here, political engagement does seem to me an understandable part of the Christian life and discipleship. Doesn't mean we're all going to end up voting for the same members of parliament, but it does mean we do want to take this seriously. We do want to be praying for this whole process. We do want to be seeking God's wisdom and seeking God's kingdom, that it will come. We pray for it, but also we'll have to see signs of it. Yes.
Yeah. In light of all that, we're not the only country going through election. It's an election year for many countries around the world. Do you think there's any advice, obviously not which party to vote for, but do you think there's any advice that Maltman would give to those of us who are considering how we're going to vote, what we should be looking for? I know you've written a lot about leadership as well, but is there anything that Maltman would have said around this area, do you think?
Well, I think he'd want to say something about our concern for the poor. And I think that's clearly something you can see in Jesus' own life and ministry, himself identifying with the poor. But you see, in particular, the way in which Jesus is on the suffering side. He's not the one inflicting the suffering. He's the one receiving it. He's not the one on the side of the powerful, even though he has greater power than anyone on earth and everyone on earth put together. He's willing to be in that place of humble servanthood, because he wants to be identified with those who are in need of his grace and care. He comes as the great physician to bring healing to those who are sick, not those who think they're well and don't need it. So I do think Maltman would want us to think, okay, in all the different manifestos that are coming out here, and of course in other countries as well, one of the questions that he seems appropriate to ask is, how are they going to engage with the economy in general, but in particular, what does it mean for those who are poor, and those who are oppressed, and those who are suffering, or perhaps those who don't have much of a voice? We want to be attentive to what the different politicians are offering in those areas. I'm pretty sure that's what Maltman would say.
I think that's good advice, isn't it? I mean, one of the things you mentioned there is that Jesus is receiving the suffering. I suppose some of Maltman's critics, as you mentioned before, take issue with the idea of God suffering because that means that he does in some way change. How would he respond to that question, does God suffer?
So he would be quite willing to say God does suffer. But what he'd want to say is, it's not because he's, if you like, in himself, some sort of victim. He hasn't got the strength to keep aloof, so to speak. It's because God chooses to enter into the human situation. Well, firstly, he chooses to create. Presumably, he could have chosen not to. And he's created the world, it seems, for relationship and a relationship of love. Well, those things, if it's going to be meaningful, talk about love, you can see how that will very likely, and in this case, very actually, result in actual suffering. So some sense, which must be this disappointment, things are not gone in the way that they might have done. Okay, we're skating on thin ice out here. But you can see that there is a sense in which I think we do want to be able to just acknowledge that these are really huge issues that Bob was trying to deal with, and just to notice that there is all sorts of implications of the things that Bob was teaching.
And obviously, he's written loads and loads about this, but if you could, in a nutshell, summarise that age-old question that we all ask a lot of the time, why does God allow suffering?
Well, I think in the end, he'd want to say there is something inherent to being a God who creates out of love that will allow the possibility that that love is not reciprocated and there will all sorts of horrible things may indeed do seem to have followed from that. But it doesn't mean that God has given up on us. It does mean that, in fact, God is alongside us in our suffering, and that is seen so particularly and exactly in the person of Jesus Christ as he suffers and dies on the cross. And so what we're looking at there, if you like, that's a place to fix our eyes when we're thinking about suffering. That this is the God, he doesn't stand aloof from it, but steps into it willingly by his own free choice in order to turn the course of history. So it doesn't end up in death and despair, but the door of resurrection, new and everlasting life, the kingdom of God in all its glory is as God's delight to see come. That's the way in which that is brought about. So I think that's what he wanted to say about suffering. Suffering doesn't get the last word, but God does.
Justin, what do you think Moltmann would say to someone in the midst of suffering right now?
So I think if you are someone in the throes of suffering right now, I would encourage you, as I think Moltmann would encourage you, is to firstly look to Jesus as someone who has been through really intense and prolonged suffering, but also to look to Jesus as the one who comes alongside us in our suffering. He loves us. He wants to be with us. And in fact, by the Spirit of God, who's here on earth now, Jesus is present. So I would encourage people in the midst of those really dark seasons of life not to simply shut down the thoughts about God, because they can understandably be a sense of anger. Why hasn't God stopped it? But to just call out to God, you know, and by all means say, why are you allowing this? Cry those prayers out to God, Jesus himself, and why have you abandoned me? And it turns out that through those honest statements to God, it is a way in which our faith, which may be very flickering and weak, can be strengthened. And in fact, be a means by which we are helped through that time of suffering and strengthened in it. Because we also get that sense of not just our suffering alone, but us suffering with Jesus. And of course, others who are suffering. Hopefully, people can come alongside us. So do find people who are willing to walk through that season with you. Please don't do that alone. And in that time, be praying and asking others to pray that there would be encouragement and that there would be strength to see you through.
Justin, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson, and as always, you can find out more about our guests through the links with today's show. We would love to hear your feedback. Do drop us an email with your thoughts at unbelievable@premier.org.uk or get in touch via social media. And don't forget, there are more shows, articles and resources at our website, premierunbelievable.com. You can also register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic. For more shows, resources and our newsletter, visit premierunbelievable.com.